Hello, friends, and welcome to another episode of Bat Flips and Maple Dips. My name's Clayton Croker, coming to you from Saskatoon, Saskatchewan. We've got Patrick Marsh joining us via Skype with his fancy new microphone in the Maritimes. Sounding crisp, bud, sounding crisp.
Yeah, it's actually like a free microphone that I found in my basement like 5 years ago. So I don't know, maybe I'm taking a step forward with technology, or maybe I'm just a dumpster diver. I don't know.
Greasy basement mic, nice. Not on a greasy basement mic. We got Justin Anderson about 2.5 feet away from me. Thanks for listening. The game plan for today, we're going to talk about Christian Yelich and his trolling, which was spot on. Usually trolling is bad, but this was a rare case of good trolling. We'll talk about the Jays and Vladdy and Bo Bichette for a little bit. Just some random Jays chat, because we want to get to the playoff race, because it is heating up. Like, the National League is going to be pretty exciting to watch down the stretch. We also got a nice little what if as well, looking into the 2020 season for the Jays a bit. Shout out to everyone listening on Anchor, iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcast, TuneIn, and Stitcher. Big shout out to Blue Jays aggregator as well for pumping our tires and helping us out a bit. Make sure you give us a follow, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, all that stuff. We were talking about Christian Yelich. Who would you say that you have a man crush on more, by the way, Justin? Christian Yelich or Mike Trout?
Mike Trout.
It's always getting pretty Mike close, Trout. Though. Like, man, you last season, you would mention Mike Trout all the time. This year, it's a little less, and it's more Yelich talk.
But did you guys see the video of Mike Trout's 43rd home run last night that he hit?
No.
And how loud it was? Like, he hit over the bullpen at Angel Stadium, which I sat behind the bullpens in left field in Angel Stadium. Like, both the bullpens are stacked on top of each other, so it's like home team right by the field and then away team. And he hit over top of both of them.
See, when it comes to home runs being loud, it's ruined for me forever after watching video after video of Vladdy taking
minors.
Batting practice.
Yeah.
So it's like, oh, it's a loud home run. Wasn't as loud as Vladdy's. So
Mike Trout's leading the league, though. He just decided to like mess around and become the best power hitter in baseball this year. Like,
he's the best at everything
like,
in baseball.
But he's never led the league in home runs. Like, he's just like, oh, what's one thing I haven't done before? Oh, I'll just lead the league in home runs this year.
He is baseball.
Make the playoffs? Has he made the playoffs?
Yes, once or twice.
But they didn't make a deep playoff run.
They got swept, I think.
I think one time was a wild card loss, too.
Maybe, yeah. The one time they made it to the DS, they got swept. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure.
When it comes to Christian Yelich, though, he was in that ESPN...
Body issue. Yeah.
ESPN magazine. He was naked. Sexy dude. Like, good-looking dude.
Yeah, all those athletes are.
Yeah, like, the one-year Prince Fielder was on the body issue.
That was
and it
hilarious.
Was like, no, this is, oh, it was bad.
You should get CeCe Sabathia in there.
But what do you guys think about this body issue? Patrick, I'll go with you. Like, do you kind of like how they kind of just...
Bare it all
and kind of do something different for this?
Yeah, I think it humanizes the athletes. I mean, it's weird because, like, nobody has a body like a pro athlete.
Speak for yourself. I have the body of David Wells, bud, and he is a professional athlete.
Body of a
so.
Professional bowler.
Yeah.
A darts
right.
player.
Well, who do you think you are? Oh, yeah.
I just think it's great that we're sort of normalizing looking at just the human body like that. And people make all these comments about how it's pornographic, and it's just like, no, it's not. It's athletes showing off their bodies, which they have worked very hard to, you know, I don't know how to explain it.
Sculpt.
To make it perfect. Yeah, to sculpt it. But it's pretty cool. I mean, this year, baseball's lone representative is Christian Yelich. And, you know, you got a couple of big names in other sports, like Evander Kane is doing the hockey one. And Kelly O'Hara is doing soccer. Amanda Nunez is in UFC. Chris Paul is doing basketball, along with WNBA stars, Liz Cambage and Nancy Lieberman.
Lieberman? I have no idea who that is. No idea.
Pause for laughter.
I kind of like the body issue, though, but the thing that everyone's talking about with Christian Yelich is this girl named Roxanne went to Twitter and was like, how could you do this?
In front of the children.
This is disgusting. As if it's the first bad, gross tweet on Twitter. Newsflash. A lot of gross things on Twitter. Like, if you dig into the depths of Twitter, you can find some stuff. So he tweeted back. What was it? Just relax, Roxanne.
Well, he quote retweeted her. Yeah. So that showed her tweet in the, and he just said, relax, Roxanne.
Yeah. And then his walk-up music yesterday, the next day was Roxanne by the Police. And, like, I don't know if you noticed, but the Brewers staff there, they let it go for a long time.
Yeah.
Like, usually the walk-up music's like 8
they
seconds of the chorus.
They started it real early.
They started it real early. It was like 30 seconds they played it. Yelich was taking his time. He knew exactly what he was doing.
Oh, man.
Do you think this is a greasy move from Yelich, Justin, or
is
it like
hilarious.
A cool move?
It just shows that these guys just want to have some fun too. Like, they can clap back. Like, this is how they get back at people for, like, saying stupid shit on Twitter. Mm-hmm. Just troll them with some walk-up music. It's not like it was like he wasn't explicit with her or anything. He just said, relax, Roxanne. And,
yeah.
Like, I'm just having fun. It's just a body issue. It's not like he was, like, doing a sex tape.
Patrick, where do you stand on this? Like, athletes chirping back at fans on Twitter, because I mean, they're athletes, they should have thicker skin, it's part of the game, but do you like it when they kind of poke fun at them in a non-malicious way?
100%. This is an excellent clapback by Yelich, the current reigning and defending and soon to be repeating NL MVP. I'm calling it.
You
now
heard it here
a little
first,
spicy little take there for you, but I mean, he's had such a tremendous year. He's untouchable in my opinion. He's been the best player for 2 years in a row, and he's only 27, soon to be 28. I don't understand what Miami did. They dumped all these amazing players off their team, and they suck. And Yelich, he's going to be back-to-back MVPs.
In my mind, Christian Yelich is the Nancy Lieberman of Major League Baseball. I mean, that's what I've always thought. Let's talk about someone who's hitting the ball a lot like Christian Yelich, Vladdy Jr., and somewhat Bo Bichette. Let's start with Bo. He's kind of cooled off since his hot start. I mean, not really. He's still hitting the ball consistently, but he's not hitting like 450 or whatever he was at the start of the year. We all saw this coming. But Vladdy Jr. has just been mashing the baseball. Like, I don't know if you guys have his stats up ready to go.
He's hitting like 360 over his last 30 games. His OPS is about 1.1, which those are MVP numbers. Mm-hmm. If not for Yordan Alvarez, who is on pace to break Bo Jackson's AL rookie numbers from way back in the day, Vlad would probably get the rookie of the year, but the way Alvarez is smashing it, it's like otherworldly. It's record breaking.
Is Vladdy meeting your expectations right now? Like, despite 100%. The slow start and everything like that, despite the late call up, is this where you thought he would be at this point?
Yeah, I mean, he was coming off that injury when they called him up. He didn't have that much time in Buffalo. Took him some time to adjust. Once he started figuring out what those pitchers were trying to do to him, going down and away, how many times have we seen him just poke the ball down the right field line? Or just dump it into right field. He's not trying to hit that ball to left field for power anymore. He's just dumping it where it hits.
Well, I'm surprised how quick his wrists are.
Yeah, they're
like
fast.
Bo Bichette, you can tell his wrists are quick just how he bats because he keeps his hands back. Again, it looks a lot like Josh Donaldson's swing. Watching JD last night in Toronto, it's eerie how similar their swings are. It's really, really eerie. Josh is a little bit more, like, his leg kicks a little higher and he's a little bit more all over the place. Bichette, I find, is a little bit more tighter
compact,
and cleaner.
Yeah.
A little bit more compact. But, Bo Bichette and Vlad, they're, like, is Vladdy meeting your expectations, Patrick, or is he exceeding them, not meeting them?
Yeah, way, way back when, at the beginning of the season or before that, we did discuss what Vladimir Guerrero Jr.'s floor was going to be, as in the minimum that he would be able to perform. And we said, or the general consensus was that as a rookie, as a 20-year-old in MLB, the minimum that he would bat would be 280.
Mm-hmm.
And he is currently batting 280, and it's been climbing pretty much nonstop since early May, I think it was. He's batting 350 in August. He batted 284 in July. He's just the kid is just, it's outstanding. And I do think Yordan Alvarez deserves to win the Rookie of the Year. I don't think it's a big deal that Vladdy's not going to win Rookie of the Year, because I just don't think it matters. The jury's out on which player's going to have a longer, more successful career. But Vladdy's doing all of this shit at 20 years old. It's ridiculous. I can't believe it. His OBP is 353. I love it. I think this guy is going to play for us for a long, long time.
Hot take. Hot take right there. Wow. Are you telling me that Vladdy's going to be playing for the Jays for a long... No. No. I don't believe that.
I'd be happy. I would be satisfied if he was a career Jay, even if his numbers dwindled and he ended up finishing with numbers, you know, like below his dad. I would still be happy. I would still be very happy with, like, his performance. But I think it's something special. And honestly, like, imagine what he's going to do, you know, at 21, maybe get in a little bit better shape, maybe lose a little bit of the, you know,
the thickness.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe a little bit. He's not hitting as many jacks as what we were hoping off the All-Star break. In fact, he's only hit, I think, maybe 6 or 7.
15 total this season.
Yeah, but I mean, like, his batting average is unbelievable since the All-Star break. I think it's like 330 or something like that.
Yeah, well, that's...
I mean, I can tell you right now, it's 329. That's insane.
Right. Well, the thing is with Vladdy is, I mean, he's... This is the most games he's ever played in a season. And last year when he played in just under 100 games, he only hit 20 home runs. So he's a line drive hitter, but his launch angle, I was looking into some StatCast stuff today, his launch angle is lower than the major league average. He hits a lot of low line drives. Like, how many home runs has he hit where they've just been like ropes just over the fence, right?
Tons.
Yeah, he just
probably
hits
the majority of them.
He just hits them so damn hard that they don't drop. They just carry. So until he decides to hit the ball in the air a little bit more, we won't see as many home runs. Like, his fly ball percentage is lower this year than it was in AAA at the start of the season by quite a bit.
You're looking at StatCast. That never happens.
Yeah,
that's,
I love StatCast.
Such a shocker. I mean, scolding hot takes and absolute shockers. Buckle the fuck up.
The great thing about Vladdy is that he's not a dead pull hitter. Like, he hits almost as many balls to center field as he does to right field, and then his opposite field percentage is pretty high too.
Yeah, nothing worse than dead pulls. Hey, ladies.
Speaking of dead pull hitters, Justin Smoke hit his 20th home run yesterday.
Good for him.
3 years in a row, he's the first Blue Jay first baseman to do that in a long time.
Yeah. Before we get into the playoff talk, quickly here, what did you think about Josh's return to the Rogers Center? Did you like the ovation? You got two standing O's.
Yeah, it was great. I mean, he said he was happy to be back. He said, did you see the comments here? He said he missed the foxy lady behind the plate.
Oh, yeah.
The home plate lady. Yeah. So he was living it up. I mean, he enjoyed his time in Toronto. I think he's sad and the way it ended.
Yeah. One thing I will say, though, the Jays, with that goodbye video they made for him, or not goodbye video, the tribute video they made for him, I like it when the commentating is in the background.
Yeah.
Like when Buck and Pat are in the background, not just music, mm-hmm. because it just gets you more jacked up and makes you relive those
makes
memories.
You remember it more.
They just had that Adele Set Fire to the Rain remix, whatever it was. I mean, it was great, and seeing him, the epic slide into home and stuff like that. But you got to have Buck and Pat in the background. It just makes it way better.
Swing and a drive.
Get up, ball, get up.
All you hear in the background is, looks like a ball player.
Yeah.
Looks like a ball player.
Oh,
just like remix.
Oh, yeah. I'm Pat Tabler.
Great
I say the same
Soft
thing
hands.
Over and over
Soft
again.
Hands.
Let's talk about the playoff race, shall we? When it comes to the American League playoff race, two of the divisions, it's over. I mean, Houston's probably going to win the West. The Yankees are probably going to win the East. That's Central, though. I can see Cleveland getting hot.
They were actually in first for a little while, a couple weeks ago.
Minnesota's good. And here's the thing. Minnesota's great on the road.
They mash bombs,
They're 41-22 on the road.
Yeah.
Like, they're a really, really good road team. But when it comes to the American League wild card, Cleveland, Oakland, Tampa, let's throw Boston in there because they're Boston. Patrick, which two teams are making the wild card out of those four?
Cleveland and Oakland, for sure. I wouldn't count Cleveland out of winning the AL Central, but at the same time, like, man, the Twins are the better team, especially on the road. But Cleveland, I don't know. They've got a lot of players. This is weird and anecdotal, but they've got a lot of like high energy players like Lindor who could take over a game really quickly. And maybe it's not even going to matter. Maybe they get in the wild card, win the wild card game, and then they just storm through the playoffs. I wouldn't count out Cleveland. I also wouldn't count out Oakland either. I think Oakland, once they all their players come back from the IL, I think they're scary. I wouldn't want to play them in the divisional round.
Tampa Bay is winning the wild card, and Oakland is finishing second. Cleveland's going to miss the playoffs.
Mm.
They traded Trevor Bauer. They kind of sold their season.
I was going to say that trade, when they traded Trevor Bauer, it seemed kind of weird. It was like, are you guys really giving up on the year?
That was
their
wild card game starter if they made it, right?
Yeah. And like also, too, they weren't that far back when they traded Trevor Bauer. Like, sure, they've been playing a lot better baseball as of late, like since the trade. But that was kind of a head-scratcher. Like,
yeah. I think Tampa Bay is going to get hot.
I'm going the same as you. I'm going Tampa Bay and Oakland. I think, like I said before, that Cleveland does have a chance of winning the Central, but now the more I think about it, I kind of changed my mind the last 5 minutes. But because, again, I think Tampa Bay, like, they're so underrated, and no one's talking about Tampa Bay. Those teams that no one talks about during this time of the year, those are the most dangerous teams. Because when you look at teams like Oakland and like Minnesota and Cleveland, a lot of people are talking about them. The pressure's on. No one's really paying attention to Tampa.
Well, the thing is, I mean, Tampa lost Blake Snell to injury, and he may miss the rest of the season, but there's talk that he could come back for the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
So if they can get through that wild card game and have Blake Snell and Charlie Morton and Tyler Glasnow as a top three in the rotation, that's pretty solid.
Patrick, is Boston done? Do they have a chance?
They do have a chance. I deliberately picked all of the teams that are less than 10 games back of the wild card for both American and National League and our stat sheet here looking at it. I don't think Boston is 100% done, but it's just such a – man, it's a tough road ahead for them. It helps that Tampa's lost their last three games in a row, which is – it is a bad time to do it. That means that – if I'm not mistaken, they would have been tied with Oakland as early as like a week ago. And now Oakland is a game above them. And they've won two in a row while Tampa's lost three in a row. So
the big thing with Boston is they are six games back, right? With 29 games to go. So they got to gain six games in less than 30 games.
That's tough.
That's tough to do.
Well, they don't need, it's not just them getting hot. They need the other teams to start sucking too.
And if they play Tampa again, which they may because it's a division team, they've got to beat them. And they need to hope that Oakland and Cleveland start losing because those are in two of their divisions, right? So it's tough.
Well, they got to hope that those two teams, because again, I think Cleveland and Oakland play each other again. They got to hope that one of those teams, like they just split that series and then they get hot. But the National League is just as exciting. The National League wild card is going to be a ridiculous finish. But in the National League, the East, the Nationals kind of have a shot.
Yeah.
5.5 back. But the Braves, like, even though they lost to the Jays, like, the Braves look pretty good. I like the Braves. Who was saying that the Atlanta Braves are going to be super, super good like a month ago? Saying that at the All-Star break that the Braves are one of the better teams in baseball? I can't remember.
You always do this when you like said something a month ago. You're like, who was that again? Like, who?
Yeah, because I always take the sexy picks, the sexy unknown going out on Olympics. And when they work out, it's great. But they're 80-54. They're another good team on the road, too. They're 41-27. The Nationals, again, I can't see them making up that much ground. The Dodgers won the West.
We don't even have
anybody
else there.
They should be clinching any day now or something.
I think the magic number is below 20 now.
Their Central division's also very interesting. You got the Cardinals, the Cubs, and the Brewers. Yep. Patrick, can you see the Brewers making a move in the Central?
Yes, I wouldn't count those Brewers out just because of Christian Yelich. But remember way back when, the last time we talked about the division leaders, we were all on the Cubs. And they should walk it off. And now they're 2.5 games back of St. Louis. St. Louis, they're not even – I think St. Louis are super overrated. They're terrible on the road. So are the Cubs, and so are the Brewers.
That whole division's bad because they play each other all the time.
Yeah.
I don't know what to make of the Central. I think the wild card, though, is way more interesting to talk about.
Yeah, the wild card, like, there are so many teams in it. Right now, the Nationals and the Cubs lead it. The Nationals are in first by three games in the wild card. Then you got the Cubs. Then you got the Phillies, who are two games back. The Mets, who are three games back. The Brewers, that are three games back. The Diamondbacks are four games back. I guess we can count the Giants, but the Giants are such a hurting squad.
I don't know how there's teams like the Phillies, the Brewers, and the Giants who all have negative run differentials.
Yeah.
And yet they're somehow, those things always even out. And I saw a tweet yesterday that said, like, over the past 30, 60, and 90 days, the Brewers are at 500 baseball. So they haven't done anything remarkable since they started the season hot.
Mm-hmm.
They've just been playing 500 baseball for the last 3 months.
Yeah.
So that, along with their negative run differential, it doesn't bode well for them because their pitching is weak.
Yeah.
And their starting rotation is who? I don't know anybody, any of them.
Who's, yeah, it's, who's on the mound? Super What's soft. On first?
Yeah.
that one was for me. That one was for me. Don't worry about it. So same question with the National League wild card here. Who's winning it? What two teams, Patrick?
It's the two teams that are currently holding it. I remember we were all on the Mets and how they were the sexy pick, and then they just lost four in a row and completely lost all their momentum.
Marcus Stroman got rocked last night too, a couple two-run shots.
Just total. I think they rode the high for a little while, and now they're coming back down to earth. And I'm not saying they're toast. I think out of all the teams that I picked, the two teams that are really toast are the Giants and the Padres. The Reds eventually, like you said, that run differential does make a difference, and it does kind of help even out the record. Yeah, but they're running out of runway.
Yeah, their run differential is not. It's only 14.
And they're 8 games back. Yeah. Like, that's not going to happen.
The D-backs at 61, a plus 61 run differential, are 4 games back. That's a team who could get hot.
You heard it here first, the Mets and the Phillies.
Wow.
I think that the Nationals are just going to crumble. I don't know why. I just have a feeling the Nationals are going to break down.
They're going to do classic National things.
I just think they're going to break down during the stretch because they always do.
They're
scary, though. They never play well at the end of the season. They never, ever play well. They always fall apart.
They are scary, though, with Scherzer, Corbin, and Strasburg.
They do have great pitching. They've always had good pitching, though. Yeah. When have they not had good pitching in the past 5 years? The Cubs, I just think that they're going to just play mediocre baseball, but I just have a feeling that the Phillies are going to get hot. I don't know why. There's going to be one game where the Phillies just come back and win, and they're going to start riding some momentum. I have a good feeling about the Phillies. I don't know why. And then just the Mets, I don't know. I picked the Mets, and I want to still go with them. Wild card, National League.
I'm going to go Nats and Phils.
You going on the Phillies train too, hey?
Yeah, I'm going to hop on the Phillies train.
I like the Phillies train. Again, the Phillies are kind of like Tampa Bay. No one's talking about them. Other than Bryce Harper stuff, no one really talks about the Phillies. And again, those are the teams that are so dangerous at this time of year because they just fly under the radar and take over. Like, they just kind of do their own thing. They don't have to worry about the press or the papers or anything like that. I don't know.
I think the Phillies. One of these teams is going to go on and win like six or seven games in a row, and it's going to totally change the landscape of this wild card race.
And it's going to be the Philadelphia Phillies. Okay. Let's get to the what if section here of the show. Also, a little bit of a rant from Mr. Patrick Marsh. The what if today, if I'm correct here, Patrick. If we were Ross Adkins, what would our rotation be for 2020? That's the what if today?
It's kind of that, but it's meant to be more of a like realistic analysis of what's to come for the rotation. It's hard to explain. It started off with me writing a what if, but then it just started to turn into a here's the reality of the situation. Here's where we're going to sink in money. And the part where I'll turn it back to you guys is actually way down at the end. When we start to speculate what free agents are going to pop up.
Cool.
So
we'll just hang out then.
Yeah, just hang out for a wee bit. And if there's something you guys think is absolutely incorrect about what I'm going to say, you can totally call it out.
I will yell at you.
Yeah, just totally just shit on me. It doesn't matter.
Perfect.
But I think we'll all probably be very close to the same page. I'm interested to see what you guys have to say with regards to free agency, but let's just get started. Imagine that you are Ross Adkins. Don't imagine that too hard because it sounds like a miserable existence having to deal with Toronto media 24/7. So Adkins is going to have to take a real hard look at how to build a rotation for 2020. We could make a very strong argument right now that it is the weakest spot in our entire 25-man roster right now. So let's try to figure out what it's going to look like for 2020 and see what kind of work needs to be done. Just some initial thoughts for us to chew on before we get into talking about what it might look like. Matt Shoemaker is almost certainly going to be good to go next year. If for whatever reason his rehab has a significant setback or he opts to retire due to injury or something like that, that would be the only reason that he wouldn't be in the rotation. So I think we can all count on Shoemaker being in that rotation for 2020. We good with that?
Yeah. I think so. I got nothing. So far, so good.
Cool. So Ryan Baruchy is almost certainly going to be ready for opening day 2020. 2019 was a complete total fucking disaster for Baruchy. And as 2020 rolls up, he's going to be 26, very well prepared, hopefully in the best shape of his life, ready to take a spot in the rotation that he definitely earned last year when he came in as a rookie and performed quite well against some teams that we didn't expect him to perform well against. So I would say another spot in the rotation, possibly the opening day start will go to Ryan Baruchy. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I don't really like Ryan Baruchy anymore. Ryan Baruchy has lost a little bit of my trust, to be honest with you. But
there'll be somebody else making open day start.
I think Ryan Baruchy won't be making that start.
I'll get to it later.
Yeah, I don't think Ryan Baruchy is ready to be the guy in our rotation. If he is going to be in our rotation, I think he's going to be low. And same with Sean Reed Foley. I just those two guys this year just really didn't prove it. And they were like before the year we said it, those are huge. This is a huge year for those guys. Just the rebuild year. We know we're not going to be good, but if they can go out and show something, that's huge going forward. They haven't shown me anything this year, especially Reed Foley. Mm-hmm. He was your boy last year. And yeah, he's no longer your boy.
He has we'll been get there. Not great.
Yeah, okay. But yeah, I don't know about Baruchy, but go on.
Okay. So the next thing to consider is the fact that we've got about four guys on the roster right now who are competing for innings in Trent Thornton, Jacob Wagaspak, Sean Reed Foley, and Thomas Pannone. They're all going to be battling for at least one of those rotation spots amongst each other. The expectation that Atkins has is if there's two or more starters within the organization that are recently acquired or drafted or traded for that are currently in the system that are prospects or considered prospects, the Jays will be well established for a long run of success. In my opinion, I would rank those four guys based on their overall 2019 performance, including the minors, with Trent Thornton in first place, Jacob Wagaspak in second, Sean Reed Foley in third, and Thomas Pannone in fourth. Obviously, that list is subject to change with the final leg of the season coming up, but that's how I see them in terms of their 2019 performance. And we can certainly discuss it at length when we're grading everybody at the end of the year. But just to speak of it anecdotally, I think Trent Thornton has proved that he can strike out major league batters on a regular basis at a very high rate, which I think is huge. Once he learns the control part of the game, I think he'll be much better. Jacob Wagaspak has been good. I don't think anyone could argue against that. Sean Reed Foley was terrible in AAA, but he's been serviceable since coming up in MLB. And Thomas Pannone has had an absolute nightmare of a season, and they continue to trot him out because there is nobody else. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, that was the quote of the year, right, from Charlie Montoyo? There's nobody else.
There's literally nobody else.
So, yeah.
My list would look a little different than that, but that's because we haven't brought up the young guys in AAA. I think the young guys in AAA are going to make a move next year to our rotation, and we're going to get two guys at free agency.
Sure.
I don't think any of the guys there, like Trent Thornton, maybe, but Sean Reed Foley, Pannone, and Baruchy, I would have trouble putting them in our rotation next year. I wouldn't feel comfortable having them in there. They just play. They haven't been great this year. And I know our team sucks, and I know they haven't been getting run support, but it's not like they're losing games 2-1. They're losing games like 8-4 or 9-5, you know? Mm-hmm. Like they're allowing a lot of runs. Thomas Pannone, no. Reed Foley, no. I could see Baruchy being like a fourth or fifth guy, but I definitely think that we're going to go out and get a big arm in the offseason. We're going to get a big ace kind of guy. We're going to pay a lot of money and overpay, which is fine because we need to overpay for pitching.
Yep.
So we're going to overpay for pitching. That guy's going to start opening day. I think that maybe Thornton or Shoemaker would be three, and I'm thinking Big Nate's going to be – or two, and then I'm thinking Big Nate's going to be three. I'm thinking Big Nate and Anthony Kay are coming up next year to be in the rotation.
Opening day.
Opening day, I think. Do we have to worry about playing time with Nate Pearson?
The thing with Nate is this is the first season he's thrown, like, he's going to throw 100 innings this year.
Maybe we do want to keep him in AAA next
year. I think what's going to happen with Nate is he's going to pitch most of next season in AAA. They may even start him on that innings limit again that they kind of did this year with the five innings and two innings, maybe like a six and a three or something like that, kind of limit his innings a bit.
In his starts in AAA, he's been throwing like six innings, though.
He's been throwing well. He threw a seven-inning start, threw a six-inning start. They've been letting him rip now. After the All-Star break, they said, yeah, we'll let you rip now.
And his off-speed stuff has gotten way
better. His curveball is very good.
He's freezing guys with his curveball in AAA. And I think Anthony Kay is going to make some strides. I think he's going to be in a rotation.
He has since we acquired him. He's been great.
Yeah, so I think that Anthony Kay is going to be in our rotation next year. I think we're going to get two outside arms, and then Trent Thornton and Shoemaker Wodges Pack. That's my rotation for maybe next year.
Let's get into what we were just talking about with the minor leaguers. TJ Zoik has made some significant strides at AAA and may very well see some starts in September this year. He might be a September call-up. And he might get a chance to actually pitch in the big leagues. Same with Anthony Kay. Like you said, he's been really impressive since we picked him up. I think a lot of people were surprised, although I'm pretty sure it was Justin who pointed out that Anthony Kay was a little bit underrated as far as an acquisition goes. I know a lot of the luster was with Simeon Woods Richardson, but Kay has proven to be very effective in AAA in a season that's been really hard on pitchers in general in AAA, dealing with the new MLB ball and the fact that the ball may or may not be juiced. A lot of adjustments. Nate has been excellent in the minors, and he could sneak into the rotation with an overwhelming performance in spring training. I don't know if Nate necessarily gets a start this year in MLB. I mean, it would be cool or interesting to see. But I'd say out of all three of those guys, the closest to actually throwing an MLB pitch, I think the first of the three of them will be Zoik, and Kay won't be too far behind him. And it'll be interesting to see if they limit Nate as far as his innings go as the season gets a little bit longer. Maybe he doesn't pitch again this year after, you know, mid-September or whatever it is. I don't know if he sees MLB pitch. Or not. I don't know. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I think you're pretty spot on. I think TJ is going to be the very first one up. And it'll be very shortly after, if not the day after the Bison season is done, which is coming up soon. They're on their final homestand currently. I don't think we'll see Nate Pearson in September. Not this September.
God, no.
Oh, God, no. He's come up from Dunedin already this year. So he's already jumped up two levels, which is great. That's what we wanted from this year. We wanted a healthy Nate Pearson, and a Nate Pearson who's throwing a crap ton of strikes, pitched in the Futures game on All-Star weekend. He's done everything we could have possibly wanted him to do this year.
I still think he might make our opening day roster next year.
There's a chance.
Why not?
But it may be one of those things where he makes a few starts, and then they shut him down for a bit.
I would be okay with that.
Yeah.
I would be okay with that. The one thing I will say about Zoik, be careful of the no-hitter.
He gets ground balls.
I know he gets ground balls, and I know he's a great pitcher, but the one thing is, whenever pitchers throw a no-hitter, all of a sudden people are like, oh man, he's great. Hype. Oh, he's awesome. Oh, he's great. Like, the hype train starts. Some pretty iffy guys have thrown no-hitters, like Dallas Braden. Remember when Dallas Braden threw, was it a no-hitter or a perfect game? It was on Mother's Day.
Yeah.
I can't remember, but he pitched it. What is he doing now? He's working for Barstool Sports.
Yeah.
And that was like 4 years ago?
Yeah.
And like, it wasn't that long ago, and he was still young. So like, sometimes guys will throw a no-hitter,
Edwin
get
Jackson
a lot of hype,
has a no-hitter,
and people get really excited about it. Just don't, again, we did this to Thomas Pannone when he first came up and was really good. Hyped up the Pannone train, choo-choo. Let's pump the brakes on Zoik a little bit.
Yeah.
Same with Pearson. Again, I'm pumping Pearson's tires. I shouldn't be pumping them as much as I should. We're all guilty.
He's a top 10 prospect in baseball now.
I think that's just about it. But does anyone have any closing remarks here about our pitching for next year?
Well, there's still a couple more things to go here before we shut her down. With regards to Zoik, the reason why I threw him in there is because he actually has been our best starter since the shuffle up where we were kind of leaning on like career minor league guys to kind of go out there and throw regularly. Zoik has actually been arguably our best starter in AAA who's not named Anthony Kay, Nate Pearson. Like, he's been there the whole year, hasn't he?
Yes.
Or most of the year, at least.
He was hurt in spring training. He had an outside shot of making the Jays roster in spring training.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, it's not just the no-hitter, although the no-hitter is definitely like a strike when the iron is hot kind of thing. But I want to conclude before we talk about the free agents with the fact that we might end up seeing the use of bullpen days next year, where we see a mixture of Sean Reed, Foley, Thomas Pinone, Joe Biagini, Sam Gaviglio, Justin Schaefer, possibly Jacob Swagaspack if he doesn't earn a spot in the rotation, and maybe Anthony Kay, who knows, get, you know, two or three innings each on day five of the rotation, with the hopes that using multiple arms can kind of keep them all fresh for other spot starts with injuries, but maybe also, you know, get some meaningful innings out of them. It's hard to say whether or not this is a long-term possibility in Toronto, because it does mean having like a really thin bullpen, or just having like a really good bullpen that's overwhelming. And right now we lack quality starters in the organization, and we do actually have a good bullpen. If you look at the numbers, we have a legitimately good bullpen. So I don't know if you want to waste Joe Biagini or Justin Schaefer or even Sam Gaviglio on a bullpen day necessarily, when they've actually proven, especially Schaefer and Biagini recently, that they are what we need out of the bullpen.
You know Joe Biagini is a Houston Astro, right?
He no longer plays for us.
Oh, shoot. Yeah, you're right. Sorry. Yep. I was – what was that? Yeah. My bad.
I just want to kind of let you go for a minute, see if you caught yourself. But no.
We would have wrapped it up when I said we should have wrapped it up, this never would have happened.
No, I feel bad now because I was hyping up Biagini. But, I mean, I guess even without Joe Biagini, we still have a good bullpen. And Schaefer is definitely, like, the guy who sticks out the most. I don't think Derek Law has been overwhelmingly good. And, yeah, it does kind of suck that we did deal away someone like Biagini, but I don't know. Like, Sam Gaviglio has been serviceable. He was super good until he totally ran out of steam in early July, and he was just getting the crap kicked out of him.
Bullpen arms are a dime a dozen, though. You can go out and buy a 30-year-old bullpen arm for a league minimum salary.
Yeah, 35-year-old even, yeah. Too. Yeah.
It doesn't really matter. As long as they throw hard and get ground balls, we don't really care.
We get to the finish line here, and the next step is for us to consider free agent arms. I compiled a list of 7 viable candidates who are young enough to fit within our window as far as success goes. They include Garrett Cole, Zach Wheeler, Madison Bumgarner, Michael Waka, Alex Wood, Shelby Miller, and Jordan Lyles. Obviously, Michael Waka and Shelby Miller have not had good seasons at all.
Shelby Miller hasn't been good for 4 years now. I wouldn't touch him with a 55-foot pole.
He could end up being a Shoemaker project, though, where we bring him in as an arm and see what happens.
He's so done.
You think Shelby's done?
Oh, God. He's been done for 3 years. I was one of those guys. He got hurt at the end of his St. Louis days. And then the D-backs tried to resurrect him. Didn't work. He spent a ton of time in the minors for the D-backs because he was just absolutely terrible. And then, the Rangers tried to make him a project this season, and again, absolutely terrible. He's walking 6 guys per 9 innings.
Oh, that's great. Such a good stat.
It'll fit right in. It'll take up that Aaron Sanchez role.
Might be worse than Aaron Sanchez.
Oh, way worse. This might be it for him. You're right. I included him on the list just because of his age range.
Yeah, I think we can probably bump the Michael Waka, Alex Wood, and Shelby Miller off this list, and I wouldn't feel bad about it.
You don't think Michael Waka would be a viable I guess, I mean, the high
BB. They give up way too many home runs. That's the problem. Yeah. You can't give up 2 home runs per 9 innings when you're only pitching 6. If you're pitching 6 innings, you're giving up more than that probably. Mm-hmm. Like,
not to mention the 4 walks per 9, which means he's given up at least 2 walks and a home run.
They're negative WAR players. I mean, I'm brutal. Pretty sure Trent Thornton probably has more F4 than those guys do this year.
Do you think we could get Madison Bumgarner for cheap next year?
Not for cheap. No, none of these guys are going to become me cheap just because of the thin market. Like,
when it comes to Madison Bumgarner's potential, though, because Madison Bumgarner, it's not like he forgot how to pitch. He's just kind of on a little bit of a cold streak. Like, he hasn't been playing great. But if we can get the Madison Bumgarner of, like, 4 years ago for, like, how much do you think he'd make a year?
He's making $12 million this year.
So we probably run around 20.
18, 19. Gerrit Cole is the best pitcher, the best free agent available, period.
We're not getting Gerrit
Cole. He's making $13.5 million this year. The website SpotTrack, they do like market value. They have his market value at $28 million a season.
Yeah, we're not getting Gerrit Cole. We're probably not getting Wheeler. If we got Bumgarner.
Yeah. The problem with any of these guys is the Jays are going to have to overpay.
And oh,
the,
definitely. That's what I said before.
So if, yeah, like you mentioned before, and let's just be hypothetical. If these guys, let's say the teams want to sign them to a four-year deal because they're all like around 30 years old. You don't want to get into a 6 or 7 year deal with a starting pitcher who's almost 30. So if teams want to sign them to, say, a four-year, let's just say $100 million contract, $25 million per season, the Jays are going to have to go 1 year up, 5 years, and probably add another $2 million on the annual value. So looking at 5 years, $130 million.
But I'm okay with that because we need pitching.
And we
I'm
have, okay with and we have payroll to spend, allegedly.
I'm okay with that because we need pitching so bad. We can't go into next year with rotation with the guys that we have now.
Not if if the management team does what they said they would a couple weeks ago when Shapiro said, oh, yeah, like we know the fans are tired of losing. If we think there's a shot at winning, we'll take it. They've got to think there's a shot at winning.
Yeah. Or he's up to something.
Or he's
he is all the time. That's it. That's all for this episode of Bat Flips and Maple Dips. It was a good talk about pitching. I love talking about our pitching because it's just, again, we don't have to talk about our players anymore because they're awesome. Yeah. Like, our lineup batting, is great, but our pitching, oh boy!
That's going to have to catch up.
Yeah, thanks for listening. Thanks for following us on all the socials. If you haven't followed us yet, it's at BFMD Podcast, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all that stuff. Anchor, iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and TuneIn and Stitcher, all that jazz. We're all over it. Thanks for taking the time to listen. For Justin, for Patrick, my name's Clayton. Have a good one. The extra song today, obviously we're going Roxanne by The Police.
It has to be.
This is for you, Christian Yelich. Good job.
And for you,
good
Roxanne.
Good job taking down the keyboard warriors, bud. Have a good one.